Welcome to Roundtable Talk, a podcast about longevity, senior services marketing, and the quality of life as one ages. Roundtable Talk is brought to you by Pavone Group and Varsity, a senior services agency focused on helping clients win the mature market. If you like the fresh perspectives we deliver in each episode, please give Roundtable Talk a 5-star review on the podcast service of your choice.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Varsity's Roundtable Talk. Our guest is someone with an important story to tell. For Goodwin Living President and CEO Rob Liebrich, the fight against dementia is personal. In 2011, Rob and his family noticed that their mother, Wendy, was experiencing early signs of memory loss, so they decided to do something about it. The result is the Stronger Memory Program, a program that uses reading, writing, and math exercises to strengthen the brain and reduce the effects of mild cognitive impairment. Rob, welcome.
Great to be with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you. And before we talk about Stronger Memory, tell us a little about yourself and Goodwin Living.
Well, I grew up in Oregon, and my mom, dad, brother, and sister, really close to my grandparents and family, moved out to the East Coast for school and stuck around for a long time. That's a little bit about me, a wife, three kids, a dog, all the good things, love to travel, love people, and really becoming a big fan of brain health these days for obvious reasons. And then Goodwin Living is a really special organization started in 1967 with the idea to support, honor, and uplift the lives of older adults and the people who care for them, focused through an Episcopal affiliation and lens. And really serving now today in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, about 3,000 older adults on a regular basis. And then nationally, if you count all the programs we're doing, we're over 40,000 people lives touched. So
that's amazing.
Doing a lot of important work right now.
And I do love how you've taken it outside the footprint of Northern Virginia and the D.C. metro. So that's wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been with great intentionality. I think COVID actually was a big part of that, Derek, in terms of showing us how critical path it was that if someone had something and someone else, like your neighbor, didn't, how critical it was to share and uplift that neighbor and go without for a little bit if you had to, but how important that was.
So that's great.
We're leaning into that.
So what inspired you to pursue a career in aging services?
So I started off in telecommunications, actually, a very different field. And I was traveling with my now wife, and we came back from a trip, and we ended up back in Oregon with my grandmother, my dad's mom, Grandma Lee, about to move into a senior living community. And the day before that move took place, I sat by her bedside as she passed away. And it just hit me so strongly that I needed to join this field. I needed to bring whatever I could, energy-wise and talent-wise, to trying to take out the fear and anxiety in the process that people experienced and try to replace it with hope and purpose. And I think my grandma was excited for the move, but really quite anxious. And I think it didn't help with her and her health. So,
Sure. Well, that's a beautiful story. Thank you for sharing that. So let's talk about Stronger Memory. I'm familiar with the program's origin story, but for our viewers and listeners, tell us about why you created the program and your mother's involvement with it.
Yeah, so like anyone else, I'm a son first. And so when your mom starts having challenges with remembering things, repeating conversations, and actually getting lost in familiar places, which is quite scary, you want to do something about that. So that's what 2011 was about. Here I was 9 years in service in our field, and my mom was showing these signs of cognitive challenge, brain health challenge. And I thought to myself, there has to be a solution. I've been in the field long enough, almost a decade at that time. And so I looked around and clearly, you know, there's no cure for dementia even today, all these years later. We're getting closer with a lot of work on prevention side, but no cures. And so we did some testing with my mom, and yes, indeed, she had a mild cognitive impairment, which is often a precursor to full-on dementia. You know, maybe within 5 years, about 40-50% of people go from mild cognitive impairment into full-on dementia. And what that entails is losing the ability to really have your activities of daily living be controlled by yourself. And as you go into dementia, you need more support with people. So your ability to dress, bathe, toilet, eat, all those things, move from place to place. Those are what we consider activities of daily living. And so I saw this pathway that she was on, and her memory and her repetition was getting really challenged. So I didn't think it was going to be, unfortunately, one of those scenarios where, oh, okay, you have mild impairment, but you can wait and it will get better, or it will, you know, peter out and everything will be okay. Indeed, it wasn't heading that direction. But I feel like the world gives you gifts in a variety of ways, in a variety of places at different times. And one of the gifts I received was going to a conference and learning about work that was being done for over 20 years in Japan. And they had figured out with nursing home residents that if you could engage them in numeracy and reading out loud and handwriting, that you could actually see individuals' cognitive decline plateau and in a number of cases improve. And this was with nursing home residents. So if it could happen with nursing home residents who needed the most care, I figured, what if we could bring something upstream to someone like my mom, who certainly isn't in a nursing home at that stage? What if we could bring those same tools to her and get her going? And that's exactly what we did. I was able to introduce to her the concepts. She started to read out loud, do handwriting, which was her journaling, actually. And then finding math problems, probably the hardest part, like finding consistent math problems for her to do that were easy and not to worry about how complicated they were. And then I would say within 30 days of her starting on those efforts, we started to see dramatic shift in her cognitive abilities. And we weren't seeing the repetition nearly as much. She wasn't forgetting her conversations. And her ability to get from place to place was improving dramatically, all within that 30-day window of time. So pretty amazing.
That is amazing. So you actually essentially designed the program yourself from, I don't want to say from scratch, but largely from scratch, based on what you learned from this conference.
Yes, I still don't know exactly all the details of what they did at the other organizations back in Japan and the conference. We saw a little bit of the work they had completed in the nursing homes, but the concepts were universal and they were easy, right? It's reading out loud. I mean, I could figure out how to pull that together from my mom. I was writing by hand. I could figure out how to pull that together. And then finding math problems for her to do consistently, really at a first, second grade level. So not trying to engage in what often we talk about these days about neuroplasticity, the ability for the brain to learn new things, but really reverting back to old pathways and really trying to clear those pathways with materials that we all learned way back when in first, second grade and got reinforced again and again and again. So yeah, we ended up creating just a curriculum for her and cobbling together a number of things. And then really having a conversation, I remember it very distinctly. I was at I was in Seattle serving in an assisted living memory care community, part of Aegis Living, Aegis on Madison. I was working with this lady. I was a dear friend, Judy Wadsworth, and she had met my mom. She said, your mom's doing really great. And what are you going to do for others? And I thought, oh, okay, good point. Like I was having some success with my mom, but it was just my mom. And now we were a couple of years later and, you know, what else could we do for others? And so we started to embark on really creating an intentional program, not just cobbling together here and there, but what if we could really curate a curriculum? And I worked with a occupational therapist and someone who's also an educator who had taught in a number of places throughout the world. Helen Halpern, and she was great. We spent a year working together to figure out all the details of, you know, the math problems, the right math problems, the right reading prompts, the right writing prompts, and created the first edition, if you will, of the material that now is a stronger memory program.
That's and great. Was she with George Mason?
No, she was back in Seattle. She was back in Seattle. So this predates the George Mason work.
And you took it to George Mason, correct?
Yeah, eventually we did. So from that original design of that program, we rolled that out in Seattle and with an assisted living memory care group of residents. And just like with my mom, within 30 days, I started to see remarkable outcomes. We had residents who had moved in who had not been able to remember their loved ones' names. And as soon as they started doing this program, again, within about 30 days, the recall of the names was coming back. And you can imagine the emotional impact that that has on a family. And we saw people sleeping better, eating better, like all these factors that, it was powerful. And so that was powerful and awesome to see. I then made a move for family reasons back to the East Coast. And while back here, thought, gosh, we really need to have this in the hands of as many people as possible. So we recalibrated the curriculum, redesigned it, and created a whole new version. And that really came out in 2019 under the Stronger Memory moniker. And Goodwin Living as an organization agreed to, my family donated that to Goodwin Living, and they agreed to allow us to, to spread the word. And while we were starting to do that, we hadn't really thought too much of having a research partner join us. But soon within, we started to do a pilot program really in 2022 with residents at Goodwin House Alexandria and Goodwin House Baylis Crossroads. And we sought out couples in particular because we thought, gosh, if you have someone who's have mild cognitive impairment or early dementia, they have a loved one, they can partner up, they can be held accountable to do the work, because doing the work is probably the most important and hardest part. And they started doing their work. We saw similar outcomes. These were with mostly independent living residents with a spouse that had some challenges. And we brought that research. We did pre-testing on everyone to do a baseline cognitive test. And then we brought all that research to George Mason, who was really interested. The social work team there was really interested in doing research on it because they seek out non-pharmacological approaches to dementia. And so they reviewed our research and said, this is good. This is compelling. But let us do our own research on it, right? Let us see. And so they went ahead and they ended up having over 100 people that they did their own cognitive tests pre and post testing on. And the results were really affirming what we'd already seen
from mom, validation,
residents, et cetera. So powerful.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Were there any surprises through that testing?
I think the surprise to the testing was that they had over 100 people. They were from all over the country because by that time we had been able to team up with a group called Village to Village Network. And so there's a big movement afoot in the country to try to age in place. And to be able to support that, there are neighborhoods that are coming together in collectives. And so we had tied in with that organization. There are about 50,000 members throughout the country. So we had already started to work with village groups in California and really all the way through Massachusetts, back into Virginia, et cetera. So we had a good sampling of people throughout the country. And I think what was intriguing about the initial research from George Mason was that we saw this consistency. It was great to see. I don't think it surprised me, but it was nice to see that regardless of where you're at, that with 23 minutes a day on average of doing the culmination or the combination of these three things, reading out loud, handwriting, and simple math done quickly, that people could see statistically significant improvement in their brain health.
Remarkable.
And that you could take someone, there's a group within that 100, over 100 individuals that were tested that were identified to have mild cognitive impairment. And for that group, not dissimilar to my mom, that group showed the greatest improvement. So after 12 weeks, which is the prescribed amount of time we want to get someone started on the program, after 12 weeks of doing the program, folks that had identified with mild cognitive impairment based on the testing, they saw the most dramatic improvement, 26% improvement in their cognitive scores, really taking them from being in a mild cognitive impairment zone to normalizing. And so exactly what I had experienced with my mom. And it just is a really big positive outcome. And to think about what that could do for so many, that if as a country, we could take people from mild cognitive impairment stage and get them normalized, so to speak, knowing that the disease is still doing its thing. They're still, it's still happening. We're not solving a disease, but we're pushing off certainly the symptoms, it seems like, that we could push it off for years.
And to your point earlier, it was not not using drugs or meds or any of the pharmacological kinds of solutions, and simply driving up those costs and dependencies and such.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's a lot of good work happening from the pharmaceutical manufacturers, et cetera, and they've come out more recently with a few drugs that seem to have some positive impact on mild cognitive impairment, and they're super expensive. And they have side effects, and none of what we do has any side effects. And we offer it through the Goodwin Living Foundation through generous donors to the foundation for free.
That's fantastic.
So that's our hope, is that you can go ahead and try the drugs, but don't just try the drugs. Try this first, or try this second, or try this in addition to, because the combination seems to be really, really powerful for folks.
So you've talked about reading, writing, and reading, writing, and arithmetic. And are any of those, do you think, more important, or is it truly the combination of those three, the three R's?
Yeah, I think when we look at the research and the background of the origin of where this came from, I think the thing that would be held up the highest regard is reading out loud. The thing that's held in the highest regard is reading out loud. And when you talk with people who've gone through, if you've had a stroke and you've gone through stroke recovery, reading out loud is a really important part of your language reacquisition, for example. Parkinson's individuals really benefit from being verbally loud about their reading, so that they can maintain the muscles and the brain pathways there. So I'm not surprised by that, but it is probably the most important part. We get a lot of folks that enjoy the writing prompts and the handwriting in particular, the motor skills to do that, the translation that your brain's making from hand to eye to brain coordination, really powerful. And then the math is really focused on speed of processing. The math is really a speed of processing tool. So one of the things that I figured out or saw is that speed of processing in the brain, it slows down often with people, especially as you get older. And so if you can keep that speed of processing abilities high, you seem to be able to operate better. And I was just having this discussion with a resident or a prospect who I talked with the other day, and she's 91. And she says, well, my daughter tells me never to get in a car with someone who's 85 years or older. I thought, well, gosh, I mean, there's a lot of people driving around who are 85 or older, but I think that the message that she was getting from her daughter was their speed of processing is not as fast. Their response time is not going to be as fast. And so it can become more dangerous. So the math work that we do it's not difficult. It's really meant to be simple math. And I think sometimes people, when they get into that, they realize, I can focus a lot better after I've done that part in particular. Even my father, who he's seen my mom go through this journey and knows the success, he's been resistant to doing the same work that she does. But nowadays he's reading out loud, which is great to see. And he definitely leans in on the math problems when he wants to focus. So if he has to do his taxes or something else right before, he'll do a math sheet or two, get his brain calibrated for focusing, and then go forward from there. But reading out loud probably first, I would say the math problems from a speed of processing second, and then the handwriting comes in third.
Interesting. That's great. Now, you'd mentioned, pardon me, just now and earlier about how simple the exercises are, and they're designed to be that, not just in the amount of time it takes, but the exercises themselves. Talk a little about the reason for the simplicity.
Yeah, so I should have caveated. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a neuroscientist. I'm a son with a passion, and so I'm not a full expert in all these areas. But what I would say is, in our experience, that the simple allows for most people to connect to pathways that were already established and are still in there, regardless of where people are at in their cognitive journey. I think one of the big surprises that I have heard constantly is from our clinicians, the people that are providing hands-on care, the nurses, the doctors, where they go, I didn't know that person had this capacity. Hmm. I didn't realize this person could read out loud. I couldn't imagine them doing math sheets, right? So just surprising again and again how strong the brain can be, and when engaged, how powerful it can be. And so that's the goal of keeping it simple, is so you're really connecting with neuro pathways that were established long ago. And I think it's like the idea that because we're going back, we're reverting back, we're connecting so deeply to things that's where the brain's feeling like, oh yeah, this is comfortable. I remember this a little bit. And then the next part of that is, well, it's making other things better. Why is someone sleeping better? Why is someone eating better because of these factors? That part, it's the miracle of the brain, which I think we're still uncovering and figuring out. But I do recall also my mom, the simple part is typically about reading, doing the math, doing the math problems. We get a lot of questions about that. Why is it so simple? And the answer is, well, just keep it as simple so anxiety doesn't take hold. Too much anxiety when you're doing a test or math problems in particular offsets the benefit of the work. And we saw this with my mom a few years in when she called and said, Rob, this has been great. Great. I'm glad I've had these years, but it's not working anymore. And I thought, that's a sucker punch. What's going on, mom? Like, is dad snoring too much? Is he keeping you up, too much? What else? What other stressors are you having? You have vitamin deficiencies. There's all kinds of things that could be at play. Urinary tract infections, those type of things. None of those were in play. And I thought, okay, well, tell me about what kind of math are you working on right now, mom? And she said, well, I'm working in sort of multiple digit division. And it's really, it's frustrating and it's hard and I'm not getting everything right. And, it doesn't feel good. And I thought, okay, this is the thing. Like, let's revert back to simple, mom. Let's go back to simple addition. Let's go back to simple subtraction. And if that changes, how you're feeling, we'll know really quick. And let's do that. And within a week, she was back and reverted back to her good, positive brain health. So no other interventions, just shifting away from division, harder division, into simple math again.
I guess it's, when we think about going through grade school, elementary, middle school, et cetera, we're trying to progress in the complexity of the math problems in that example. Whereas here, it's not about that at all. It's just about exercising the brain, exercising the muscle of the brain.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the part that I appreciate is that you don't have to get the problems right. We actually don't care. We don't even provide an answer key to the problems, because it's not about getting it right. It's about doing the problems and having your brain get into that rhythm. Now, my mom is competitive and she would say, I want to know if I've got it right as well. So there's plenty of ways to find out the answer or to have someone else check your work type of thing after. But I think that's a critical discussion. Keep it simple and then try to keep it as engaging as possible. I think we provide hundreds of pages of math sheets, but people still get through them fairly quick. And we say, well, okay, instead of doing it in the same order that you did before, try it in a reverse direction or jump around the page or start, in a different way or go find, go to the local store and buy more, first grade, second grade math programs and do those. We don't have a monopoly on anything. We're not charging for anything. We're trying to get people to get into a habit, and that's the most important. So however people can get into the habit, play some games with themselves, reward themselves for the work that they're doing, a daily, a star on the calendar or, a special cookie or something you get after you're completing the work, something is really important. And I would say that's definitely something we've seen as part of the outcome of this, is the socialization factor is important, can be important. The work itself, it works by itself, one-on-one, it's great. When you start to work it with other people in a social setting, we try to encourage people to come together at least once a week to have an accountability group so that you don't just try it out for a week and stop, but you are called back up like, hey, come, let's talk about how things are going. So when you have to be accountable to a group of people who are on the same journey with you, you stay more compliant. And doing the work at least 4 days a week, really 5 to 7 days a week, is necessary to start to see the impact.
That's great. Now, the Alzheimer's Association reports that 15 to 20% of those over age 65 have some sort of mild cognitive impairment. It's about 10 million people in the U.S. You know, 38% of individuals with MCI develop dementia after 5 years, according to the research. Your program was created for people in the MCI phase, but can the program be used proactively before mild cognitive impairment symptoms occur?
Absolutely. You know, as I mentioned before, you know, some of the tools, and they're all basic tools, really do help calibrate the focus. And I remember distinctly a resident at Goodwin House Bailey's Crossroads, which is a great community in Fairfax, Virginia. She came up to me and said, "Rob, I don't have any challenges with my cognition. And so I appreciate your program, but I'm not going to do it. I'm just not going to use it." And I thought, okay, no problem. And she said, "But I do read the Bible every day." And I said, "Okay, that's great." And she said, "I have been reading it out loud every day." I said, "Well, that's great. That's perfect. That's exactly what we hope you would do." And she said, "And I have to tell you, my focus is so much better." Great. So it doesn't require having a mild cognitive impairment diagnosis to benefit from this work and engaging your brain in this way. And I think that's what we're really trying to infuse, is that most people are already doing things like reading the news, reading a book, reading something. Just read it out loud, you know, and if you can just add that element, it really has an impact and engages so much more of your brain. And so there's real benefit to it. So yeah, it could definitely help people even before this stage. And I would say my mom's journey so far, it's been 12 years now that she's been doing this work. And so, and we're talking with people who've been in the program for at least 3 or 4 years now. And they would say, you know, stay with it. And in the number of folks who didn't have, you know, a diagnosis before, benefiting from doing the work and sort of staving off maybe what could become a diagnosis later.
That's great. So you've developed the program, but it's not even about the program. It's about the core tenets of it. And like you said, if reading the Bible or the news or whatever it is in your normal cycle, just, you know, bring those core tenets into whatever it is you do on a daily basis.
Yes, exactly. If we can infuse it into your daily rhythm, that's perfect, right? Yep. That's the best of all worlds. And so I think the hard part to do that, your reading's the easiest part. It's also, as we talked about, probably the most important part of the equation. The handwriting prompts, they're great. You know, we provide over you know, 200 and some handwriting prompts. They create almost an autobiographical story of someone. They're fun. They're engaging. I remember early on, we had a couple who'd been married for decades, maybe coming up over 60 years, and they started to do the work together. And that's also important. So if someone has the material, you know, they go to strongermemory.org and they download the program and they say, "Well, this is for someone else." It's really helpful if you do it with that someone else instead of just hand it over to them and say, here's your homework. So a couple was doing it together and they're working through the prompts and they said, "You know, we enjoy the program overall, but these prompts are fabulous and we're spending hours talking in ways that we hadn't for years." And so that's so much encouragement for people to get engaged in the prompts as well.
Which gets back to your point about socialization.
Exactly. It's powerful. The socialization factor is really powerful.
So what about folks with advanced mild cognitive impairment symptoms or even dementia? Is it ever too late?
Yeah, I'm not an expert enough to say whether it's ever too late or not, but I'll tell you from my experience in the work we've been doing throughout the state of Virginia in particular. So early on, we did apply as we were going through the program and more people were using it. We were getting feedback from folks who had dementia, were further on the path and saying, "Hey, this is helping me. This is working." And then we said, "Okay, if it's working for folks, let's see if we can help those furthest along in the dementia journey." And so we applied for a grant and we received it through CMS. You know, over $300,000 to roll out the program to 100 skilled nursing locations within the state of Virginia. And we're making great progress. We're over 50% into the program right now. And we're being able to hear the stories of folks who really, in some cases, Derek, were catatonic and just non-responsive. And all of a sudden, they've been given the opportunity, encouraged to do some of the writing prompts or reading a little bit out loud consistently on a day-to-day basis, or doing some of the numeracy work. Sometimes you can do math, but sometimes it's just sort of checking, oh, this is the number one, and seeing if they can track on that kind of level. And the stories of people coming back, if you will, from their state of not being communicative, not being engaged. We've had so many stories, and I remember that one of the most heart pulling ones was just a wife who was in a nursing home in Virginia, hadn't talked for over a year. Her husband was diligent, dedicated, and they were able to coax her into starting this work, the stronger memory work. And within a couple of weeks, she started to change. And she started to engage, and she started to be able to engage with her husband. And the emotional benefit of that has just been tremendous. And so the team, the staff there, the team there, the husband, the family, all, even though the program, goes through sort of its 12-week course and people have to decide whether to continue, like they're all in. They want to, keep things like that going. So I do think the brain has tremendous power. Even as people are further along in their dementia journey or their brain health journey. And these are simple tools that, combat or come in at such an easy level. And we're not asking you to do hard things. We're not asking you to change your diet dramatically. We're not asking you to learn how to tango or learn a new language, right? It's just coming back to really simple things. And it seems to be helping in a number of ways.
Those are remarkable stories, and what a gift to the individuals themselves, but to their family members, to, not to seem, too grandiose, but to society overall. I mean, this is something that the world is facing in greater numbers. So that's really remarkable. And memory loss and dementia, I think in society, it has a certain stigma and can be frightening parts of the aging process, but, aging has highlights as well. You've worked with older adults now for quite some time. What are you looking forward to as you age?
As I age, I think one of the things I keep learning is people at all age really seek the opportunity for purpose in their day, and not to underestimate the potential. So if you tie those two concepts together, that people seek purpose and they have strong potential, and you marry those two up, then you have an experience as you age that keeps you engaged, keeps you being able to make a difference in your world around you in a positive way. So that's what I would seek for myself, are those opportunities. And I can't tell you I know what they are. I mean, I keep on coming across our residents at Go and Living who are starting to paint at the age of 90. And I'm like, okay, sure, why not? Or creating new, music for the first time. They've never done that before, but why not try it out? Or mentoring youth around them. That's something that they weren't doing, regularly, but they're really enjoying it now. So I think I'm not going to be much different than a number of our residents or those older adults that I see today. Maybe my own parents who are staying active, want to have a sense of purpose, don't want to become irrelevant, don't want to be forgotten, don't want to be written off. And I think all those parts are critical path for me as I age, and certainly for those that I serve today.
I think that's a really important point that you make. And, through programs like Leading Age and with our work with our clients and progressive clients like Goodwin Living, we're always trying to fight ageism. And I think that's so important to recognize that folks, regardless of age, want to be contributing members of society, whatever that might mean. And but getting back to Stronger Memory, let's talk numbers. How many communities are currently using the Stronger Memory program, and how many people have used it?
Yeah, overall, since we launched, and I think we provided the curriculum in 2019. COVID came along, as we all know. So that shifted things. We were doing things in person and then went to more of a virtual program really in 2020 when we were sort of testing with our early pilot programs with our residents and our Go and Living at Home members. And since then, in 2021 is when we really, I think June of 2021 is when we really put it out there to the world to download and you know, really come along. And since June of 2021, we're tracking about 35,000 folks who've utilized the program. And that's inclusive of, you know, it's such an interesting variety of people. We have individuals, you know, downloading it for their own use. We have senior centers that have really started to adopt it widely across. We've had communities, you know, settings, you know, life plan communities, et cetera, assisted living communities that have adopted it. And often we don't know who they are or what they're doing with it. We don't really care. Actually, we want them just to use it. But we have built in more tools for those folks, more facilitator trainings and things like that for free to encourage them. My mom has been on the circuit a lot, especially if you're in Oregon, you probably have had her call you and say, "Hey, I've got a story I want to tell and a tool I want to provide for you." And so she's done a lot of talks, Leading Age Oregon and a number of communities she's been out to, just telling her story and sharing the good news, if you will. And then we've got that Village to Village network where we've probably worked with over 50% of those chapters now across the country, which is powerful and meaningful. And we're starting to see even states. You know, we had a really important work with the state of Maryland to roll the program out to nearly 50 senior centers within that environment. And it worked out great for those that participated. We're working with a number of states right now to continue to build on the energy. We'd love to get to a national platform. You know, love to work with the Veterans Administration and other organizations to be able to provide the pathway to it. And I would say we provide it for free. We provide free training, but it does take some promotion. It does take some encouragement to keep people going with it. So it's not a cost from our vantage point, but there is a cost if you want to, you know, promote it and get people started with it. But yeah, we're tracking about 35,000 folks. We've had some really good press. Deseret News in Utah did a nice publication for us. And we didn't know that was going to happen. We ended up in a program called Bottom Line Health, which has about 175,000 readers to it. It's a paid subscription service. A lot of interest has come from that. And Jessica Fredrickson, who's our brain health director, wrote an article for that. And so we're just seeing all these different ways. But I'm looking forward. Right now, we're working with a number of physician groups. Kaiser Permanente has started to work with us and just started to say, "Oh, maybe this is good for our patients." We love that. We love those kind of relationships. And we're just coming around. We've done a number of different studies with George Mason. And we're just coming into a control group study, which I think is sort of the gold standard for all these kind of programs to say, yes, this works. We know it works. I know it works. We've proven it out a couple of different ways. We've even worked with people who are predominantly Korean speaking and had good success with that cohort and seen where socialization really was highlighted as a key factor for, you know, doing even better with the program. So yeah, about 35,000 so far. And hopefully if we do it right, you referenced the 10 million people. Love to get to 1 million people as soon as possible. And I know we've got to get to, you know, 100,000 before we do that. But the more people that can use this, the better. And I think as a country, we will certainly benefit from it because, you know, you and I know that there's just not enough caregivers out there also. And that's one of the big things that's driving us is, we see this huge, beautiful population growth of older adults, and it's coming exactly at the same time that we have fewer babies and our immigration policies are still getting figured out. So we're not welcoming in as many caregivers as we need. So we need tools like this that push off the need for care. That's our key focus. So when you have other guests on that are from the Senate or otherwise, you know, make sure you help us get this push forward. That would be really, really great.
Absolutely. And, you know, adopting the program seems like an easy decision. You know, you mentioned that there certainly can be a cost for them to promote it, but why do you think more communities aren't jumping on it yet? You know, it's available for free. What do you see as a barrier?
Yeah, I think time is probably the biggest barrier that anyone has, both individuals and organizations. And so our best situation is when we get a resident who says, "Oh, I want to lead this. I want to volunteer to lead this for my other residents in our community." And it's so easy because as someone who's a facilitator, what we call a facilitator, we say you just need energy. You need positive energy, and to be able to, you know, come back every week or every day or however frequently, that's it. And that's all you need as key tools. So I think it's really getting out the message of how simple it is, how effective it is. I was just on a call today with a group of CEOs, and one of them said, you know, we've rolled this out. You know, they have a number of communities, but they said the two communities that chose to adopt it, it's going great. People love it. It's easy. It's simple. It's effective. There's no cost to it, right? But there's still time. It still takes time. So you have to build it into your daily habit. And I think ideally what we'd say or hope for is if you're in a community setting, you're already doing all the parts. It's just a matter of doing them in a slightly different way. So you're already reading the daily news probably if you're in an assisted living community. Let's not read it to people. Let's have them, you know, have our residents read it back to us, right? Let's have our memory residents read it back to us, not just read for them. Let's have them do the writing prompts. Let's have them have some fun and do some math together. I was at a community in Oregon, just visiting. My mom was checking out a place, Rose Villa, and it's a great community. And I saw this beautiful piece of artwork, and it was literally just flashcard numbers posted up on a piece of art. I thought, perfect. What if we just, you know, put that into every community where you have flashcard numbers that are just around in different settings? You know, you go down the hallway and you can do your quick, simple math while you're walking through the hallways. I just think there's a lot of other ways that we can embed this in to the experience where people will just not even realize that they're doing the work, but they're doing the work. So
that's great. That's great. Now, your director of brain health, Jessica Fredrickson, has talked about the value of mindfulness and meditation. Do you see the potential for the Stronger Memory Program to expand to envelop mindfulness and meditation?
Yeah, I think there's so many great tools. And one of the things that we love doing is educating ourselves and then educating others on all these other, what's going on in brain health, right? The discussions around brain health. So what you find out from us is, yes, mindfulness and meditation can be really powerful, keeping stress low. We talked about that anxiety factor, right, early. So keeping the anxiety low is really powerful for the brain. And there's a lot of other things that are powerful for the brain. You know, sleep, a critical path. Getting enough consistent sleep, really, really important. And not enough people pay attention to that. You know, I have this debate with my parents, like sleep isn't waking up six times in the night. That isn't consistent sleep. It might be happening. So let's take a step back. Let's figure out how to get more hours consistently. But there's so many factors going on. And so I think mindfulness and meditation are a key area. I think there's a lot of research that's coming out. There's so much good work happening right now. The government is putting many more resources into this work, which is critical. And with all that said, I would say we're not, as an organization, we're not experts in this area. What we can come back to is we know that there's some very simple tools that people, everyone can execute with. We'd really encourage people to do that. And then physical exercise. You know, of all the things that are out there, keeping the blood flowing through the brain and making sure that consistency happens, you know, and it gets elevated through good exercise, you know, 20, 30 minutes a day of physical exercise. Between physical exercise and this work of cognitive exercise, I really think those two parts together probably could push off the need for care for most people if they engaged an hour a day in those two areas.
Great points. Good thoughts. So as we near the end of our time together, I want to give you an opportunity to speak directly to the people who are interested in the program. So if a community or some organization, doesn't have to be a LifePlan community, is interested in adopting Stronger Memory Program, how do they get started?
Yeah, we try to make it as simple as possible, and we keep on learning new ways to try to simplify the process. StrongerMemory.org is the first thing to do. StrongerMemory.org. That will route you to a website where you can download the program. Today, we offer the program in English or Spanish, electronic version for free. If folks want to get the book, it's about almost about 200 pages. They can certainly order the book from us at cost. We don't charge a premium for that, either English or Spanish. And then if they want, there's another option on that site, which says that if you want to be a facilitator, if you want to create a group, and we have groups starting up in synagogues and mosques and churches all throughout the country. We've got groups starting in senior centers and civic groups. We've got them in communities for sure, at these village-to-village networks. There's just a lot of different places where libraries are starting to get into it because, we promote reading out loud, right? So now you're creating that connection. So if there's anyone of your listeners that want to get started, strongermemory.org, and then choose your adventure. Do you want to download for yourself? Great. You want to download or send a book to someone else as a gift? Great. Do you want to become a facilitator? Fantastic. And recognize that all of this is done through the generosity of donors. We don't charge anything. But if folks want to, say, hey, I want to go help a million people with you, Rob, great. Let us know if you have some resource to help us do that, either publicity or a financial resource, and we definitely put it to good use.
Well, that's great. Well, before we get to our final question, I'd love to hear about some of the other exciting initiatives that Goodwin Living has in store, particularly the Citizenship Playbook. We've talked a lot about that over the last few years. Can you talk a little about that and anything else you'd like to share?
Yeah, there's so much going on with Goodwin Living that is exciting. And thank you for the opportunity to share a little bit. But you referenced the citizenship program that started with the idea of a resident back in 2018. The idea that our team members represent over 65 different countries in the world, and about a number of them, upwards of 25 to 40% of them are a global workforce that are not U.S. citizens. And so the resident said, gosh, I'd really like to come around people to help them if they want to become U.S. citizens on their path to U.S. citizenship. And there's a fees associated with that. And there's a test that's hard to get through. And so we have figured out a way to help coming up on over 200 people towards their U.S. citizenship. And we pay for the fees of the test. But now we also marry a resident with a team member seeking that citizenship. So you get a resident mentor, which is back to that purpose equation that we talked about and the potential that is within all of our residents. So really powerful program. And we've extended it. Now we've extended it to family members, not just our initial team members, but if they have a loved one, a child that they want to get into the U.S. citizenship as well, we'll support that. And so that's been really rewarding, really powerful. I'd say the other exciting news for us in programming wise is our work on internships. We've had now, I think this year, over 50 paid internships also through our foundation, supported through the generosity of donors. And what that's allowed us to do is touch early the lives of high schoolers and college students and show them this field. And that's allowed us to hire a number of them on as full-time team members, which is great. But more important, to be able to share the story and for them to see. And as you come in as an intern, what do you think we do? We tie you to a resident mentor. So you also have those nice intergenerational actions. And people walk away every time just about universally saying, I didn't realize how fun, how cool, how exciting, how meaningful that work was. So I'd say that internship program side is something that certainly should be replicated. The citizenship work could be replicated by anyone following us. We have a whole playbook on the citizenship side. We're working on a playbook on the internship side. And then a newer venture for us is we have a number of very talented therapists that work on our team. And we've decided that we want to make sure that not only do our current residents get really good fitness in programming exercise, as we talked about being another key elixir, but that anyone can have access to good physical exercise. So we have a library of hundreds of videos for exercise that I think we're going to start to curate and get out to the rest of the world, if you will. And then we're sponsoring classes. We've helped upwards of 2,000 people in low-income housing settings around Northern Virginia engage in consistent physical exercise. And we're getting wait lists there from all different backgrounds, all different socioeconomic backgrounds as well. But I think those are the areas that we're really excited about.
That's great. Well, I hope you'll come back in the future and go a little bit deeper in some of those too, which sound really exciting.
It would be an honor.
That's great. That's great. Well, one last question. We end each episode of Roundtable Talk with this question. What have you learned that you wish you could have told your younger self?
I think for my younger self and what I talk to even our children, we have three young children, about is believe that you can make a difference. Find your path and keep going. And I think that's exactly what's happened, you know, with the Stronger Memory work. There was a real reason, you know, for the love and sake of our mom, that I sought out solutions and then figured out a way to do something for her. But I stopped at thinking that maybe it could help other people. And sometimes you need to listen to the sages around you, the prompts, the friends around you, like Judy Wadsworth in my case, to push you forward. And when that happens, like there's a reason for it. So lean into it, be excited about it. I think I've done a decent job of that, but I can imagine if I had started this 3 years earlier, allowing everyone in on it, not just a certain small group, you know, how many more lives could have been positively impacted. So that weighs on me a little bit, but it also pushes me to try to figure out, you know, as an organization, how can we get the word out? So really appreciate spending time with you and being able to share.
Absolutely. Well, you know, that's very noble, but I have to say it is amazing that you saw this need. You kind of triangulated with this opportunity that you learned at the conference and you put it together and, you know, again, you've given this gift to the world. And, so thank you for that. And thank you for your time today. Really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. Great joy.
All right. Well, we'll see you on the next episode of Roundtable Talk.
Thanks again.
Thank you.